Iron Radio.
And the weather today in Lincoln, highs of 27 degrees centigrade, lows of 16 degrees centigrade. It'll be a day of sunny intervals with a moderate breeze. Ideal seafaring weather, you may or may not say. 4 years ago, in 2014, a young man decided to set not one, but two Guinness World Records by rowing 5,000 miles across the Indian Ocean from Australia to Africa. I know, Christian, you staggered as well in terms of working through this whole process. It is just awesome. It's amazing. Not only that, he's now the founder of Active Water. He's going to talk about the importance of water and so on. He is the awesomely legendary, and I use the term legend in every capital word, letter sense of the word, Jamie Douglas Hamilton. Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
Good morning. What an
instruction. Oh, listen. When you've rowed 5,000 miles across the Indian Ocean, that is, I mean, well, first of all, what, was it just a case of you woke up one day saying, I fancy doing something, I know, let's just row across the ocean?
It was like all great ideas, they usually start in the pub, and this one actually starts in the pub, and no one had ever done it before. And at the same time, what's the cause for us to get behind?
Well, that's very true. I mean, again, you had a crew of six pulling more than a million strokes. You had unpredictable storms, a hurricane. You broke the rowing up into two-hour shifts. And, of course, you burned 10,000 calories a day, so a great way of actually keeping fit, I suppose. And had to drink up to 13 litres of water. Now, this is the interesting point, because we come around to this notion, just as Jamie actually sort of cuts off there, in mid-Atlantic Ocean and mid-Atlantic style on that basis. Critical stuff here. I think it's fair to say we need to bring this gentleman back, because otherwise who knows what could actually happen. So we'll get right on that straight away after this. I love the colourful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle word on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. Softly smile, I know she must be kind. When I look in her eyes, she goes with me to a blossom room. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the
yeah.
I've occasionally said parents are very difficult to bring into the world. And well, it may well be the case, but nevertheless, at the same time, 57% of parents worry more during the summer than in term time about their offspring, with half of parents worrying because they think their children hang out with the wrong crowd. So who better to start addressing some of the key issues in this research and providing some sage advice as ever than the awesomely talented, amazing TV presenter extraordinaire and mother of two. That'd be the fabulous Andrea McLean. How are you, Andrea?
I'm great. I feel like Mrs. Incredible after that build-up. Thank
but you
so
are,
much.
Andrea. You are. That's the important thing. Now, I kind of went in that line that parents are very difficult to bring into the world.
But I like that.
There is this sort of line in terms of this research that does suggest that in the summer months, actually, parents get a bit anxious about their offspring, particularly those aged between 16 and 17.
Yeah, and it's a really crucial time. My son is 16. He 100% falls into this age bracket. And, you know, when they're little, when they're toddlers, you know exactly where they are. They're only doing things that you've let them do. But when they, you know, my son finishes GCSEs and then suddenly the whole of summer is spreading out in front of us like a really long road through the Arizona desert. It just seems to have gone on and on. And on and on and on. And the key thing is keeping them busy, keeping them occupied.
And yet, for those of us who become more chronologically gifted, we realise that just it's over like that, effectively. It's amazing.
That's just because we drive faster.
Well, that's very
true.
Life. Yes.
Not obviously literally.
Exactly. Always thinking safety. I'm very impressed, Andrea. That's good. Now, researchers say by the National Citizen Service, 57% of parents worry more during the summer in comparison to school term time. As you said, it tends to go out or tends to go on from that perspective. Has that always been the case, or do we feel as though we're living in a society where actually because there's a 24-hour media coverage of all kinds of things that there are more things to worry about than back in the day when it was a case of, well, wait until the autumn comes around, then you can actually help with the harvest.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head. It is both of those things. It was ever thus. Obviously, part of growing up is pushing the boundaries a little bit, is trying to assert your independence. It's wanting to do your own thing. It's not wanting to hang out with mum and dad all the time. But yes, we are surrounded constantly with terrifying news stories. The world is a scary place. There are.
But it's not as scary, Andrea, as actually trying to get in touch with Jamie Douglas Hamilton when he's creating all manner of bits and pieces. Jamie, welcome back. Hopefully you're back with us now safely.
Yes, very sorry. That's what happened.
Well, we had to send out there, as you might have gathered, for an emergency Andrea McLean loose women insert just to actually start talking about various other bits we saw. Where's he? Is he in the Indian Ocean? What's happening? Let's get back on message, so to speak, because this is all focused on research from Active Water, the company that you founded, that suggests that only 19% of British folk actually know that the recommended daily intake of 1.4 to 1.8 litres is what we should be actually taking on board. And with hot weather around, we need to be properly hydrated.
Yeah, absolutely. And 90% of the UK population don't the recommended daily allowance, which isn't a huge amount, but 2.5 litres for a man, 2 litres for a woman, of which 20 to 30% actually comes from your food. So it's 1.4 litres for women outside your meals, 1.8 for a man. And this is very similar to other studies that have been done by National Hydration Council. We've actually showed that half the British population drink less than a glass of water a day, but we should actually be drinking between 6 to 8. So we're very much a dehydrated nation. If you look at other countries in Europe, we actually come fifth from the bottom per capita. Countries like Germany, France, Italy drink 3 to 4 times as much water as we do in the UK. And it's something we just don't really seem to appreciate. Almost 70% of our body is made out of water, 85% of our brains, 92% of our blood. But we seem to be more focused on reaching for sugary drinks and energy drinks or coffee or tea.
Which gives you a false hit. It's that immediate hit and then it's gone. And it's like putting sugared water into a top quality vehicle. You don't want to do it. Christian.
Absolutely.
Christian, in terms of your own experience, are you a water drinker? Are you a sugar drink person?
I used to drink a lot of fizzy drinks. It would never be a glass of water. It would be a glass of, you know, like Coke, something like that. But recently I've cut them out. I've started drinking water mixed with cordial, or, you know, whatever it is. But yeah, I have. I've for about a month now, something like that, maybe 2 months, I've cut them out completely now. And it... I have to admit, I have noticed a difference. I've been feeling a bit better and things like that. And obviously with the weather as how it's been, I've... down in water, aren't you?
The thing with respect to active water, and I want to talk a little bit, Jamie, about how you inspired in the middle of the Indian Ocean to effectively come out of getting the right kind of balance. Did you think at the time, I'm just hallucinating this, it must be somebody who's mixing my seawater with various other sort of activities on that sort of basis? But that whole notion of not having any caffeine, not having any sugar, not having any calories, using purified spring water from Shropshire, adding electrolytes, was it a kind of Damascus moment of revelation for yourself, Jamie? You thought, this is it, this is my function in life?
Well, it's very, I mean, we were at that stage drinking anything from 9 to 13 litres of water. And as you said, you know, we were hallucinating, we were passing out in the oars, it was getting very dangerous. A few times we actually ended up in the ocean, luckily we were harnessed on. And this only changed when one person mixed with seawater, with water. And that's something we're told never to have done. And it actually turned out to be one of the best drinks to rebalance us that we could ever take. Yeah. And almost immediately we noticed the effect. And so every second bottle was 1/4 seawater and the rest was normal water. That was the reason, I think, you know, all of us believe that we actually ended up breaking the Guinness World Record for speed. And so after that, yeah, it started to be inspiration, you know, for what is possible with water. What else, you know, can you do? And in Japan, when I researched it all around the world, they've been ionizing water, that's splitting water into positive and negative ions, since 1960. And they've done hundreds of clinical trials. And I couldn't believe I'd never, in this concept, had never come to Europe. And look today, the growth of that market in Britain, it's now the fastest growing category of water because people feel different. They actually refer to it as energy water.
And even in the United States, it's becoming a very fast-growing beverage. A lot of people commenting on how it makes them feel great, being hydrated, being balanced. Maybe, Jamie, it ties in with the fact that actually we're, what, 80, 90% water ourselves, actually. If you take out the water, effectively, we're completely just a few pounds of chemicals.
Yeah, and water supports every function, you know, every vital function in the body. You know, from getting nutrients to the cells to removing waste from the lymphatic system. You know, 92% of the blood is water, from cushioning our joints. You know, a lot of people don't seem to realise this. And in the media, we always talk about healthy eating. You don't hear talk about healthy drinking. And what we end up having is we actually leave the whole of Europe in energy drinks. And a lot of people go from caffeine high and sugar high and sugar low. And at the end of the day, they feel tighter. And at the end of the week, they repeat that process, they'll feel tired throughout the week. And it's actually much better just to have that sustained energy throughout the day. You get that from drinking water, and especially the right type of water.
Jamie, we'll obviously be going immediately to activewater.com. That's ACTIPHwater.com, which is a wonderful go-to website for all manner of bits and pieces. In terms of that alkaline ionized water at the heart of the whole sort of routine, is it going to be sufficient to have you row across the ocean again, or is it a case of, no, I've got my 2 Guinness World Records, I'm not going to do it again?
we're actually planning another one, which is going to be quite a dangerous one, and that's in Antarctica. And that's going to be from starting with their research station up past the peninsula all the way to South Georgia, which is a very similar route to what Shackleton did when he lost his boat Endurance. And we're going to be rowing it.
Is it?
So yeah, that'll be the first ever row in Antarctica.
You know, once again, our jaws are dropping in the studio. Just we thought, no, it's okay, you know, the Douglas Hamiltons can relax, etc. Jamie's the Antarctic. Well, you know,
how do you train for something like that? How do you get your body into and your mind into the right sort of frame for doing something like this?
So it takes about a year of training to get used to it. But it's not just. I mean, you really have to be trained 5 times a week. Very hard training, 5 times a week. But it's on top of that, it's how you deal with the seat deprivation. It's just 2 hours on, 2 hours off. So 3 times a week, you've got to have a rowing machine outside your room and set your alarm at different times, whether it's 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock. And as soon as your alarm goes off, within 10 seconds, you have to be on that rowing machine and rowing for 1 hour. And then once you're finished, you don't go to the loo, you don't go to, you know, to have a shower or anything. You're sweating, you get back into bed. And then at 7 o'clock, your alarm goes off for work. You know, so it's really getting into that mind of being, you know, being comfortable, being.
well, with our resident sleep doctor expert, Stephanie Romaszewski, I'm sure that she'll help with light alarms and so on. But Jamie Douglas Hamilton, it's been awesome and a genuine privilege to actually connect with your good self today. I remind you, you can go to activewater.com, that's ACTIPHwater.com, or one word. We've got two critical questions for your good self. Jamie, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link? I suppose two, really, because we had to come back to you after this little first one. We thought we'd lost you halfway across the ocean or the Antarctic. Has it been okay for you?
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to say I've never had an introduction quite as good as the one you gave me today, so thank you very much.
Well, I'm sure with respect to the explorations and the things that you'll be doing over the next few years, that's fantastic. Can we prevail upon you? Will you join us again? Will you come back? Maybe not from the Antarctic, although I don't know, we could actually try with satellite phones or something. Will you be back and join us in the very near future?
Absolutely, I'd love to. Love to stay in contact. Thank you so much.
A round of applause for Jamie Douglas Hamilton, please, founder of Active Water. Hooray! So after you've broken two Guinness World Records by rowing 4,200 miles from Australia to Africa, why not row across the Arctic Ocean as well? Hats off to Jamie Douglas Hamilton. The only way we can actually keep the standard going is go to the awesome individual, editor, culinary, gastronomic, supremo, William Sitwell. How are you, William? Okay?
Yeah, good morning. Where's my jingle gone?
Well, I was actually looking for The Milk by Wanderlust and only could come up with The Church and Under the Milky Way, which is not what you want at all from that point of view. So the jingle will come through. Worry not. It will be actually happening probably before I've actually finished this particular little monologue, this introductory thing, which I actually say it is the William Sitwell, not in France, because actually his namesake William Coles is in France, in Nice in France yesterday, but back in the joys of Rickmansworth. a fine part of the land in which you're about to record and video, to use that wonderful technical term, a fine group of fine souls from the WRVS. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. I've come to support the work of the Royal Voluntary Services. It's an amazing organisation that brings together mainly the elderly and community, gets them out of their houses and means they can, because a lot of these people, you know, they live on their own and they get to sit and dine and chat and get some good grub in their tummies and a good hearty conversation, and it, you know, helps to keep them going and make them feel better. It's a fantastic organisation.
Truly awesome. In fact, Rachel's right now ready to say...
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
You see, you can always rely on Rachel, even though she's now living in Yorkshire. There we are. So did you do anything to celebrate Yorkshire Day at all yesterday, William, or is it a case of no? Well, why would I? Or perhaps your great aunt Edith would actually be looking at it and say, actually, yes, we should have celebrated Yorkshire Day.
We should have done. I have to say, it wasn't completely front of mind.
No.
And I can't think, I'm trying to think of something that I may have done that I could pretend had...
Well, I mean,
you could say you
shared the agony of Joe Root being run out as a Yorkshireman in the test against India, which was a kind of ironic way of celebrating Yorkshire Day, perhaps.
Yes, I mean, I'd like to say that I drank an entire bottle of Sardinian Vermentino in salute of all things great in Sheffield, but that wouldn't really mean anything, would it?
No. But at the same time, it's the thought that counts. That's the important thing. This video that you're shooting for fantastic sort of reason, where can people actually see it? Will it be online? Will it be a part of a program that you're actually putting together? Is it a feature? What's the sort of way in which our listener can actually say that's what it's all about?
We're going to create a little one-minute video about the brilliant work of the RVS. And I am acting as MasterChef critic, turning up at a centre in Rickmansworth where there's an amazing lady called Tricia who cooks meals of 3 times a week or more, completely voluntarily, and I'm turning up to critique her food. So the question is, will I pour a bucket of filthy scorn all over it, or will I actually give her the thumbs up? Let's hope it's the latter.
Well, I would exactly. But having said that, it has to be pointed out that William Sitwell has a shaft of incisiveness that's always there, that's always applied. He will not take any prisoners. That's the important thing. Not take any prisoners. Neither does actually his supper clubs, because they're always wonderful. The Western Super Club.
Well, I must. I had Western Super Club.
I know. Did you? Yes. It's not enough water, William.
What I'm happy to tell you and your listener in the Lincolnshire village is that I'm launching my supper clubs in my supper club program, which has gone very successfully for a year now in Northamptonshire into London. So the idea is I'm going to highlight talent with very little restaurants in London, give them the opportunity to feed rather more diners, or I'm going to get well-known chefs from out of London up to town to cook. So, and I'm doing it in collaboration with Oka, who are an amazing furniture and homes brand. So the Oka showroom is going to be the venue for our dinners, and so I'm very excited about that. The first one is on September the 26th, and while I'm plugging things, I've got the great Giancarlo and Katie, his wife Caldesi, who are fabulous Italian cooks, and they have a couple of restaurants and a cookery school in Bray, and they're sitting at the Western Supper Club on September the 21st. So my supper club has become indeed a super club.
Indeed, it's a super supper club. It's fantastic. We're looking at images of the great Giancarlo at this very moment in time, and they've got nice, happy, broad smiles on their faces because they know they're the best.
Anyway, he's very interesting, Giancarlo, because he's a pasta-loving Italian who a few years ago discovered that he actually had developed a huge gluten intolerance. So as someone who spent their whole life troughing down large plates of pasta, that's one hell of a challenge. And he reckons that he makes the most incredible lasagna, but he can't eat it now. But he is using gluten-free doughs and so on. And it's quite interesting when someone who's a great pasta lover and pasta maker suddenly comes face to face with a health dilemma like that and how he gets through it. So for those people out there who are genuine celiacs, which have genuine gluten intolerances, Giancarlo Caldesi is a good man to follow.
Fantastic. It's the 21st of September if people actually want to save the date and access details or to go to the supper club. It's Britain's best supper club. Returns on September the 21st. And you've also got a wine selected by Nick Darlington of Red Squirrel. It's not code.
Ooh,
it's not
his euphemism. His wines are pretty good. They're pretty eclectic. He's a top man,
Nick
Darlington. If you're looking to widen your interest in wine, if you want to get some different... So Nick Darlington, if you're looking to stock up this coming autumn on some different wines, there's two companies I recommend. There's Red Squirrel, go to their website, and there's also the Wine Beagle. And the Wine Beagle is run by a young chap who I met the other day, and you sign up to a subscription, and he basically buys wine direct from producers. No middleman, small producers, so you can really open your eyes to a variety of wines that you've never come across in the supermarket shelves. So that's quite exciting.
It's awesome. Water, very briefly, because we need to head on to our digital expert who's going to talk about how digital inequalities in the UK are growing. That's Ryan Weeks, editor of Altline. We were just speaking, as we mentioned, to Jamie Douglas Hamilton, founder of Active Water, and it seems that in Britain, William, 90% of us aren't drinking the recommended 1.4 to 1.8 litres of water a day. How does that fit within the Sitwell household?
Well, my wife always says you didn't ever see me drink any water unless I'm sort of gasping with thirst.
Mm.
But I do keep a bottle or a glass on my desk. I think the key thing is to try and buy recyclable containers. I think it's a great scourge of the modern era, people walking around with plastic containers of water. Having said that, here I am filming and someone's just given me a bottle of water. But it's good for the joints. Any osteopathist or chiropractor will tell you that you need to, you know, drink, 1.5 litres a day.
Exactly.
And not just when you're thirsty. So,
and
get glugging.
Work through that notion, as the Japanese have found, as even the Americans are actually finding it, and even Christian, you've demonstrated that you can actually detoxify by getting rid of the sugared drinks, replacing with ionised water. It's a whole
new world. Most ridiculous thing, it is a very depressing point is when you see kids drinking sugary drinks. When I was younger, no, doubtless not dissimilar to you, we never had bottles of water. We sort of plugged out of those little fountains, didn't we, at school. We didn't, I didn't even remember anyone telling us to drink water. We drank water when we were thirsty, drank water at mealtimes. So I always remember when I first saw an episode of Friends, seeing these guys lounging over sofas, clutching at plastic bottles. And I thought, this is weird. And, of course, it's what everyone does now. And look what happened. Look what's happened to the oceans. So we need to keep glugging, but we need to do it out of...
In a responsible manner.
In fact... the idea that here we are on your show talking about how we drink water responsibly.
Mm.
I mean, when the world's gone nuts, hasn't it, Alex?
Welcome to the world of the 21st century. I thought we'd have silver suits and rocket ships, but it's drink water responsibly. There you go. Life continues in its own merry way. More in a matter of seconds. But William Sitwell, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I had a joy to connect with you in the Lincolnshire Villager.
So will you be back with us similar time next week?
Why not?
Hey!
Hot town, summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But at night, it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Cool town, meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat, looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But at night it's a different world, go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night, despite the heat it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city.
my neck getting dirt and gritty. Been down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match head. But now it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on, you dance all night. Just fight the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer. In the city, summer, in the city.
Over the years, we've heard various phrases from the digital divide through to digital natives through to effectively just get online. But it seems that when it comes to inequality in the United Kingdom, there are challenges afoot. And to address some of those inequalities and maybe just suggest some ways in which we can start sorting out and providing solutions, we're delighted to welcome the ace editor of Altline, wonderful Oddline. Online publication that deals with financial technology and more. It's the awesome Ryan Weeks. How are you, Ryan?
Hi there, Alex. I'm good, thank you.
Good. This is a really interesting line that you come out with, that technology is conceivably to blame for Britain's biggest rise in inequality since the 1980s, since the days of Mrs. Thatcher's government and so on. This certainly cannot be good news as we head to, again, the onset of Brexit next year, whatever happens with respect to that, and so on. Is technology going to be one of those huge challenges that the country is going to have to come to terms with?
Yeah, I think, look, broadly speaking, I am a proponent of technology. You know, I write about financial technology as my day job. But I think it's important to bear in mind that there is a sort of fundamental tension, or contradiction, if you will, in disruptive technology, which is that at the same time that many different types of technology are making the lives of their customers better and making it easier, for example, for them to manage their finances. I write, for example, a lot about digital banks like Monzo and Revolut, which are certainly doing that, and also making financial services more accessible. They are also, these digital banks, let's take them as an example, part of a disruptive trend that is cutting jobs out of the banking system. So if you look at Lloyds, for example, Lloyds Bank, which is obviously one of Britain's biggest banks, over the last 6 or 7 years, they've cut 30,000 jobs and closed down goodness knows how many bank branches. The reason they've done that is because customers are slowly, gradually being driven online, and part of the reason for that is that companies like Monzo and others, other challengers like it, are changing customer expectations. So that you see they're simultaneously part of a trend that is cutting away jobs, but also making the lives of their customers better. And it's just, you know, with many different types of technology businesses across many sectors, it's a contradiction that holds true. And it's certainly one to consider, I think, for policymakers and for the companies themselves.
Artificial intelligence, of course, much beloved of science fiction writers, and the Turing test and ways of actually checking whether or not you're speaking to a real live human being or not, as the case, can they fall us from that perspective? It's often heralded as being the saviour. It's going to give us all time to actually do more stuff with our leisure time and so on. It's going to be choice. We're going to do away with the drudgery because that's what we'll be handed over to the artificial intelligence, etc. Is that a false dawn? Are we being sold potentially a pup here that could lead to a whole range of challenges?
Yeah, I think. Look, I mean, it's very difficult to predict. Obviously, you may need artificial intelligence to do that. But you know, I see sort of broadly speaking two scenarios that could emerge. One is that there was a report that came out over the weekend from PwC, which suggested that 7 million jobs could fall foul of artificial intelligence over the next 10-20 years. But at the same time, it said that 7.2 million could be created. And it felt that this report concluded that 7 million would be cut out of jobs, sectors like finance and manufacturing, and that perhaps 7.2 million could be created in sectors like healthcare. So that's one scenario, that actually artificial intelligence ends up being a net creator of jobs. But for that to happen, there has to be real emphasis on retraining and retooling in the workforce, because it's going to be a more digital workplace in the future. And people are going to have to adapt to that. I think the second possible scenario is, as you mentioned, that more and more tasks that are currently performed by humans basically get automated and begin to be executed by machines. And these are now cognitive functions rather than just physical functions, as has happened in previous sort of industrial revolutions. And in that scenario, that's when governments might have to start thinking about things like universal basic income. And actually, there was an article over the weekend, I think, in which the Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell, said that Labour were considering a pilot for UBI. I guess they'd focus it on certain towns across the country in their next manifesto.
We all know that the rapid pace of technology is changing the world as we know it, but what about the long-term impact of disruptive technologies on society? Not my words, but the words of Female First in a review of Pimple, written by yourself, Ryan Weeks, and exploring the darker side of technology and the darker side of city life. Are we doomed, Ryan? Is it a case of the bottle's half empty and we can't cope with all this, or can we actually sort of see some kind of optimism here?
No, look, I don't think we're doomed. All I think is that we have to be proactive in considering the long-term ramifications of technological change. And, you know, that may sound like an obvious thing to say, but actually prior to the 2016 elections, there was a very good article in the Evening Standard from Anthony Hilton, which basically made it explicitly clear that none of the major political parties had addressed, you know, had included plans for an increasingly kind of automated workplace and what they plan to do to help workers continue to remain relevant. So, you know, I'm not sure that it is being fully considered at the moment, and I think it's something that needs to come more and more to the fore in terms of public policy.
Christian, any questions you'd like to put for Ryan about digital inequality and so on?
It's interesting listening. When, for instance, one of your points about where it's 7 million jobs would be lost, but 7.2 million jobs could be created. And when you were saying about, I mean, would, for instance, the younger generations and so on, like people younger than myself, you know, even to 5, 6, 7 years old.
Just to set the scene, Ryan, Christian's currently approaching his second year of a journalism degree at the University of Lincoln. He doesn't want to be told that a robot's going to take over his work as a journo writer.
I know, I need to know somebody somehow, yeah. No, it's, I've seen like 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds who can use iPads and phones and stuff like that and really, really quite well. Would it not just be people will just progress with the times, and as jobs change and as technology essentially becomes more and more part of our lives, would the jobs that we do just change with them?
I definitely do think there is a degree to which the workforce would keep up with change organically, right? But I do also think that there needs to be emphasis in schools, for example. You know, the curriculum is going to have to change somewhat to reflect the changing nature of the workplace. Possibly more people are going to have to be pushed into STEM subjects. And, you know, maybe people will have to have a basic understanding of coding and engineering. I don't, by the way. But, you know, you can see that I just see a future where these things are going to become more and more relevant, and certain jobs that exist today won't exist in the future. So, yes, certainly people will are already becoming far more sort of comfortable with you know, a more digital lifestyle. But I think there does need to be some kind of proactive change here.
Clearly, I'd recommend altfi.com if you're interested in fintech. Yes, it's financial technology. I know it's another portmanteau word. We sometimes like fintech, is there? And of course, why not? Shameless plug for Pimple, the dramatic consequences of technological disruption, particularly with some very interesting industries. That's what I should say, Ryan, but extraordinary sort of read for that value, available from all the good online sources as well. Ryan, is there anywhere else that you'd suggest people should actually go to follow up on some of the things we've just literally skimmed the surface of in the last few moments?
No, well, for me, it is very much the book Pimple, as you mentioned, and altfi.com. And but you know, I think these themes will become increasingly prevalent, so you know they won't be able to avoid them.
Very true. So two final questions for Good Self, proving that we are not robots. We do care about the human experiences, carbon-based life forms. Ryan Weeks, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
It's been very good. Yes, I would rate it highly.
Well, then the next critical question, of course, in surveys around the world is, will you be kind enough to return and maybe speak again about the joys of fintech, Pimple and more?
I would very much like to, yes, thank you.
She's a black belt in karate, working for the city. She has to discipline her body, 'cause she knows that it's demanding.
Not so much Hashimi, but Youssef will be with us at 10.02, just after the news for the Sky News Centre at 10, with Youssef on Thursday. Splendid. There we are, trailer head. Ryan, you're going to be leaving us now. Not forever, but you will be leaving us. Have you enjoyed Stephanie Romoshevsky, Richard Vips-Williams, Gabriella Ferralta, Ian Lennox, Jamie Douglas-Hamilton, William Sitwell and Ryan Weeks, and will you be rowing around the coast of Britain in the near future? As well as keeping yourself fully hydrated. Has the programme been okay for your good self, Christian?
Oh, yeah. So I thought he was still on the mic. He didn't realise
the microphone's, bless him, it's marvellous. Sorry, using it as a music
bed. When you said Ryan, I thought you were still on the phone.
You're quite right. I did say,
sorry,
Ryan,
yes, no,
it's Christian.
It has. As always, I've enjoyed
well,
it.
Well, there you go. Back. No, next week you're back up in the north,
I'll
aren't
be
you?
Back home, yeah.
So we'll see you in a few weeks' time,
yeah,
then.
This will be my last show for a while.
So we can't even talk about how Stoke City will beat Leeds United over the... no, who knows what could happen. It's a whole new world. We'll welcome you back when you're back on board from that point of view. Malcolm Tomlinson is joining us later. We've got John Rowe from the Revesby Country Fair joining us in a few seconds from now. And then that'll be it for us. But Christian, we'll say au revoir for now. And in the classic words of famous Yorkshireman Freddie Truman, I'll see thee. Away from the fabulous Revesby Country Fair 2018. It's going to be an awesome experience in so many delightful ways, with some of the finest vintage tractors and classic cars, together with archery, fishing, clay shooting, climbing, much more. Who better than to actually talk about the delights of the Revesby Country Fair than that ace chairman extraordinaire? It's John Rowe. How are you, John?
Well, what a marvellous introduction. Thank you very much, Alan.
Well, great to connect with your good self. Now, this is something which, I must admit, we have been remiss in not setting an outside location report at, because clearly Revesby is one of Lincolnshire's oldest fairs. It goes back 100 years. Not quite as old as the Lincolnshire County Show, which I think is about 132 years old, or thereabouts.
Right, yeah.
But nevertheless, you know, you've got a tremendous scenario here in a fantastic, awesome setting. Dare I say it, even a better setting than the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society Showground.
It is a fantastic... old English parkland, there can be no better setting. And, of course, we've got a big history with Sir Joseph Banks used to live there. So, yes, there's a lot of tradition and history goes back. But it's a fantastic site, marvellous site.
How long have you been involved with the fair yourself, John? I mean, because I know that you guys work tirelessly and a tremendous routine. I mean, already, I bet the line is you're beginning to think and calculate about Revesby Country Fair 2019. Exactly. So how long have you been connected with the organisation?
Our team, I've been chair of our little team for 10 years, but we've been involved on and off doing various things, well, for as long as I can remember. And I used to attend it as a child. My grandfather used to show shire horses there back in the 1920s. So, yeah, we've got a long family involvement, shall we say.
And in terms of that whole system, it does seem as though you've got the balance right between keeping the kind of historical roots of the fair, keeping the kind of notion of countryside events, etc., but also kind of opening it up to a kind of more urban audience, so that for people who maybe haven't experienced a country fair before and sort of think, oh, yes, the country, it's a strange thing out beyond the city limits and so on. There's really lots of things to actually occupy and entertain them.
Yes, of course there is. Come and find out what a friendly bunch we are in the country. But we have lots of different... We have over 200 trade stands selling all sorts of things. We have a music venue where we've got some youth bands playing. We've got lots of things to see and do. I mean, country sports-wise, you can have a go at archery. We've got some wonderful pictures of some little children having a go at archery. And then for the adults, you can have a go, if you've never done any, clay pigeon shooting. We've got tutors there to let you have a go with that. If you've got a dog, bring your dog. We've got a dog show. We've got, which is a bit of fun, Little Chris's Dog Agility. Now, you've seen show jumping on the telly. This is show jumping for dogs. And it's all great fun. Nothing taken too seriously. There's all sorts. We've got the usual fairground, which they were setting up yesterday. They've got some few exciting things. Oh, we've got some dodgems, I believe, coming this year for the first time.
And in addition to that, I mean, you've talked about the dogs and a whole variety of other bits and pieces, but we've also got the Atkinson Action Horses, are probably, I mean, if you kind of think, oh, I'm not really into horses, etc. If you've watched Poldark, if you've seen Peaky Blinders, you'll have seen these equine geniuses in action.
You will, and hopefully we will have the very same horses that you will have seen on television with Poldark riding. He came to us 4 years ago. He hadn't done many country shows before, but he's been all over since, particularly last year. He did the Great Yorkshire Show last year, which is more than one day, and he's done all sorts of shows. And he really is fantastic. The sort of the liaison and the empathy he's got with his horses is absolutely incredible. And you don't have to be a horse fan to appreciate what he can do with them. He stands up and rides two at a time, standing on the backs and doing all sorts of wonderful
things. It is quite outrageous. I mean, this year, of course, at the Great Yorkshire Show, as our listener will attest to, we were covering the joys of Leaping Lorenzo, who is a whole stack of sort of excitements with that. But I think this guy is not too far off Leaping Lorenzo in terms of his quality and his range.
No, definitely not. No, he's as good as, yes.
And of course, the other thing is, Leaping Lorenzo, as far as I'm aware, never on Poldark or Peaky Blinders. So there we are.
No,
take that.
You won't have seen his horses on the telly. No.
Exactly. So you mentioned trade stands. There's a whole stack of things that I often say, really, this is the place to actually go to if you fancy doing some very early Christmas shopping or various other things, because there's a whole stack of things that you get through there. I mean, I'm just looking at some of the key things that you actually got in terms of the traders that are coming through on the website. And again, it's a real chance to, without all the pressure of having to do all your mobile checks, etc., really kind of do some retail therapy, shall we say.
Oh, yes, you can do it. Yeah, you can do a little bit of that. We like to think there's a bit of something for everybody, really. You can sit and watch, or you can do, or you can shop. there's all sorts of things to do, and we've got, from flowers to trailers to cars to sweets to, sheepskin slippers, thinking of the winter. It will get colder than it is now. And of course, you can have an ice cream while you're watching. We have some wonderful ice cream.
You've raised, of course, the issue there. And although our friends in Saltburn had to do a few changes around this weekend because of the inclement, shall we say, weather that the Saltburn Food Festival suffered from, it's all looking good for the weekend. It's looking splendid.
We are looking. We had a heavy downpour last Friday, which has softened the ground, and which has made it ideal for the horses. And the weather forecast looks absolutely incredible for Sunday.
In fact, I would say wear sunscreen.
That's the key thing for that.
Yeah. You can go to the usual three W's, reevesby-country-fair.co.uk to find out details.
You can cut the hyphens
out.
Just go Reevesby Country Fair, all one word.
Fantastic. Yeah. And you can see, I mean, we also haven't talked about the classic cars, right next door to the Range Rover in Block D.
Yes, that's right. Oh, you know, we've got... I mean, one year we had a Reliant Robin that somebody had converted into a fire engine, which was very interesting. Yes.
You can,
so we get all sorts of things.
You can never underestimate the range of folk that you've actually got within that. You've got the Gymkhana Ring, you've got, obviously, tractors, you've got classic cars, as we mentioned, you've got the fairground systems from that point of view. What are you most looking forward to? Because I always quite like the dog agility and the clay pigeon shoots, but what about yourself? Or is it a case of, look, I've organised the whole thing, just like getting through the day is what I'm looking forward to.
I never seem to get myself very far removed from the main ring, but my most enjoyable thing is meeting people. We meet no end of different people during the day, all with smiles on the faces, all enjoying themselves, and that's the highlight of me. And then, you know, the winding up process where we actually can sit back and give money away to charity due to people's generosity. And we've also got a new bursary scheme this year where we're actually aiming to help 25 years and under if they've got a little project. They can apply to our Rural Activities Fund. So we're going to, we're launching that this year. So we're quite excited about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, I'm not sure about whether one of the fine souls who actually helped connect us together via Carrington Communications, that'd be Megan Windsor, is actually going or is going to be attending the Reevesby Country Fair. If she hasn't, I think she's in for an absolute treat. And I'm looking forward to hopefully maybe even getting some of our midweek drive-outs along as well to cover the whole system. I cannot believe it's a mere £10 per adult to actually attend. I thought surely there's a decimal point wrong here. I mean, for all the excitement that you've got there in a whole day of activities, we've mentioned some of the sort of key things from that point of view. That is an awesomely value for money packed entrance fee.
We're very competitive. We've kept the price pegged for the last 5 years. We want people to come and enjoy themselves, and if they've got a little bit more money in the pocket, they might give it to the traders or take part in something else. Very cost-effective day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because obviously we're literally hours away from that, can people still buy online?
You can still buy online for today and I think in the morning, and then we're going to close, because we do, with the old-fashioned system, we post your tickets out to you.
There we are.
It works very well.
If people listen to this, John, think, well, okay, fine. If they turn up at 8:30 a.m., can they actually buy tickets on the gate as well?
Of course they can, yes.
This is fantastic.
I've always got people willing to take their money off them.
They can buy
a little programme so they can see what's on during the day. Well, the programme is only £1, so that will not
be. It's exactly. Now, I've got to ask the question. The little silhouette that we've actually got on the website of Reevesby Country Fair, is it a March hare?
It's a rabbit. Now, a long while ago, somebody thought we ought to have a bit of an image, and this was way before I was involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a big rabbit with big floppy ears.
Right.
And if you go around the county, you should see some of our signboards on the roadside advertising us. And you'll see there's a rabbit holding a placard up. And we call him Reggie.
Well,
and the one you see on your image in front of us, like our dancing rabbit, is a sort of an updated version of Reggie.
Well, I mean, Reggie Rabbit. I mean, what can you say? I mean, presumably regularly known for such phrases such as, what's up, John? Sorry,
that's it.
Resisting. We mentioned the website Reevesby Country Fair. You can tap into search engines. You get all the details with respect to that. We've got two final questions for your good self at the end of this little preview of what's going to be an absolutely awesome event. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, John Rowe? Has it been okay for you?
That's been brilliant. Yep. Well, I enjoyed talking to you, Alex.
Well, in which case, John, can we look forward to, if we don't manage to get to the Rewsby Country Fair ourselves this coming weekend, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future? Will you be kind enough to return?
Of course, yes.
Splendid. So there we are, the thing to do over the weekend, the Rewsby Country Fair. That's it. We're out of here. It's been a joy, as ever, with the Midrick Drive Morning Edition. Don't forget, Yacht is up next. That's Yousef on Thursday.
I'll be riding shotgun underneath the hot sun, feeling like a someone.